For the Senate Committee on Commerce and Labor. Today is Monday, February 6th, and we are going to have a public hearing and possible work session on two bills, Senate Bill 1063 and Senate Bill 1064. I will open up a public hearing
We got organized first, Mr. Chair.
I thought we did this.
No. This is our first hearing, Mr. Chair. So.
And we are going to have an organizational meeting where we adopt committee rules and the introduction of committee.
We have an organizational meeting first. We move.
Yes.
Maybe we should. Oh, I won't say that.
Senator Devlin.
I was going to say something. We would spend 6 hours discussing this, but I shouldn't say that. So moved, Mr. Chair.
Right. We have a motion for the adoption of the committee rules. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We have introduction of committee members. I believe everyone knows Senator Winter, Senator Devlin, myself. Senator George has never looked so good, and Senator Prozanski looks about like he always does. Now, see? Perfect.
Perfect timing.
Now we will open public hearing on. Well, wait, let me have a report from staff first.
On the bill, Mr. Chair?
Let me just open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1063.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 1063 corrects a Scribner's error of House Bill 3242 from the 2007 session. It clarifies that Level 1 commercial contractors are to have one or more key employees with a combined total of 8 years of experience, and Level 2 commercial general contractors have 4 years of experience prior to licensure. There is an emergency clause in the bill, and the effective date is July 1st, 2008. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Any sign-up sheets? Does anybody, just raise your hand, anyone want to testify on Senate Bill 1063? Both you enter and sign in, please.
Mr. Chairman, before they come up, realize we're correcting our own error.
Yeah.
These are probably the gentlemen that had something to do with finding it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Good morning. Drew Hagedorn for the Associated General Contractors here today in support of Senate Bill 1063. I think Ms. Van Winkle did an excellent job describing what the bill does. It remedies the Scrivener's error that we missed in one of the amendments to the bill that ultimately was enrolled and passed. Recall that this piece of legislation was from last session, House Bill 3242. It changed experience requirements for commercial construction contractors. The 8-year requirement was to be assigned to the senior license holder, the level one license holder, and that was inappropriately reversed to 4 years. And then by contrast, the junior license holder was to have just 4 years experience, but the bill read 8. And we're concerned with this because it could create a barrier to entry for emerging and small businesses, and it just doesn't comport with the intent of either AGC or the legislature. So thank you.
Senator Westland, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board, members of the committee. The Construction Contractors Board has no opposition to this. They haven't voted on it, but they understand the problem that was created by the initial bill and has discussed the issue and has, I know, no opposition to the bill. We're here to seek your support.
Any questions of this august panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify on Senate Bill 1063? Not all at once. All right. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1063, open up a work session on Senate Bill 1063. Any discussion among the committee?
No discussion from me, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 1063 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin has moved Senate Bill 1063 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We will close the work session on Senate Bill.
Carrier.
Senator Winter. winners as carrier. Good catch, Teresa.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1063. Open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1064. Report from staff.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1064 is one of two bills that are being brought forward as a collective effort from the governor's mortgage lending work group. It prohibits, Senate Bill 1064 prohibits mortgage loan originators from performing and act as a loan originator in a negligent or incompetent manner. It allows the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to suspend or bar a loan originator from employment for violating a statute or rule or order of the director. It also prohibits mortgage bankers or mortgage brokers from employing a person as a loan originator if they've been suspended or prohibited from being employed as a loan originator or if the employment violates a condition or order from either the department or state or federal agency or court. The measure also requires mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers to file an annual report concerning residential mortgage lending activities by May 1st of each year. And then the bill also specifies contents and retention requirements for the loan originator's registry. There is an emergency clause on the measure effective upon passage, and there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And on in your packets today, members, there is a fiscal impact statement. You also have in front of you a -1 amendment from the work group. It clarifies that the measure applies to current and future mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers, and loan originators. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I see we have our very own Corey Streisinger. Would you like to come forward, Corey, and shed some insight not only onto the bill but also some of the issues discussed around its appearing before us in its present form.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And with me is David Tatman, Administrator of our Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, which regulates mortgage lending. And this bill in front of you today, Senate Bill 1064, is one of the products of the work group that we have been working with over the past several months to deal with some of the issues surrounding mortgage lending. I want to thank the chair for his participation in the work group, and I know a number of members of this committee have been very actively involved in these issues. There are two bills that have come out of the work group. This is one of them. The other one is over on the House side and dealing with a range of issues having to do with foreclosures. This particular bill deals with enforcement. I do want to thank all those who participated in the work group, and we have attached to the written testimony a list of the participants who participated either all the way through or partially in the work group. Many hours went into this, and I want to say one of the issues we've heard about, and not only in connection with this bill, but of course other bills as well, is concerns with some of the activity that's taken place in the industry over the past few years, and we feel strongly that we do need to enforce the laws that we have on the books as well as look at additional provisions. This bill will help us do that. So I'm going to ask David to talk about the specifics in the bill, and then we will both be happy to answer any questions that you've got.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name, as Ms. Streisinger said, is David Tatman. I'm the Administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. And before you today is Senate Bill 1064. Now, this bill was introduced in January, and you had an overview of it at that time. And frankly, Ms. Van Winkle gave you a great summary right there. So I want to be very brief. This is an industry in Oregon that is relatively new. The law did not come into effect in Oregon until 1993. Before then, there was no regulation of mortgage brokering. So we've been here less than 15 years. And in that time, an evolution of the law, we went from the oversight and regulation of the various entities, mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers. In 2001, we picked up some regulation of loan originators. And so at that time, we created certain requirements. They had to take an examination. They had to have minimum qualifications, particularly around the area of criminal violations. In 2006, we changed the law to say they had to qualify through an examination before they could begin loan originating. And I think this bill is just an evolution of that process. We're now saying that it's important that we make sure people who are either unqualified or who engage in violative practices and acts should not be allowed to be a loan originator. The loan originator is the face-to-face person that most of the industry or most of the consumers deal with. And so we think it's very important that we have some assurance those people can warrant the trust and
that the consumer should have in the process.
David, excuse me. Corey, David, could you say everything you said all over again for the benefit of Senator George?
Thank you, I mean. Yes. The meeting was my fault. It was long. I was talking instead of listening.
Please continue.
Thank you.
Ignore my facetious remark.
Well, we're glad to have Senator Devlin on board.
Devlin?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I appreciate the...
he needs to hear it again.
Dark suit, red tie.
Yeah.
Just tells you how we just look one-dimensional.
I mean, that's the difference between the two senators. Gary isn't here, but he knows, you know. Richard's here, but it's got to be explained to him several times.
Yeah.
That usually works. All right, well, excuse my interruption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as you just heard, the bill would do several things. First and foremost, it would give the director authority to ban or suspend or condition the terms under which a loan originator could be employed and make sure that they are competent, and if they engage in activity that violates the law or shows that they're negligent or incompetent, then we could take certain actions. There's a protective device there. That is the Administrative Process Act. It's not a unilateral process. If you would do just like we do in any other administrative action, we would issue an order. They'd have the opportunity for a hearing if they contest that, and an independent hearing officer would then be the person who makes the preliminary decision. The second part of the bill I think is worth noting is that we're going to ask that an annual report be provided. That's something that many of our industry does in some of our other programs. We think we learned in the governor's work group that there was a lack of useful information about the state of Oregon lending practices. We got good national information, decent regional information, but Oregon-related information is somewhat lacking. We think this will help the policymakers have the type of information necessary to address problems should they come in the future. So that would be an annual report. The individual reports would not be subject to disclosure due to the proprietary nature of that information, but the bill grants the director authority to aggregate or create an abstract of the aggregated information and then make that available. And then the other piece worth noting is the registry. The registry exists, but it's rather thin in its current posture. This would make it more robust. The idea behind the registry is to allow employers and the consumers, the public, to have some information about the employment history, the length of time in the industry that a loan originator has been there, complaints that have been justified, that has gone through a verification process, and, of course, any enforcement actions. So that will give you background on somebody before you make a decision to employ that person or you decide to work with them as a consumer. As mentioned in the summary, there's a Dash 1 amendment, which we support. That essentially just clarifies that this will apply to everybody going forward, but also apply to people that were already licensed. It just clarifies a concern that there was a little bit of uncertainty about. We support the Dash 1 amendment, and we think this is a great bill. And I would be remiss if I don't mention there is a fiscal impact. We're asking for two additional positions. Those two positions would be in enforcement. One would be an investigator. One would be a law officer, somebody with a legal background to help us take additional action. We anticipate with this law and some changes in our advertising rules that we will see an increase in enforcement activity. The industry supports adding these two positions. As indicated, if necessary, after the first couple of years, we have to go forward with some type of financial increase in our fees. They're supportive of that as well. So with that, I'm going to conclude, and if you have questions for myself or Ms. Streisinger, we'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Senator Devlin?
Thank you. Just a clarification, in terms of this record that would be kept on loan originators, because we have often gotten into discussions about what records are retained about licensed individuals in terms of complaints. At what point would those be on record? Would they have to be substantiated? Would there have to be to a point where you would actually have investigated? Or would it be to a point that you've actually found some fault with the loan originator?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, It would be the latter, the last of the ones. It would not be sufficient to have a complaint. The phrase they use is justified, and justified is explained in the current law. And essentially, I read that to mean you will have gone through the process of making a determination that there was a violation, and they've had the opportunity to respond to it at an administrative hearing if necessary. So I believe a justified complaint is one where we have formalized the process and not only investigated but decided to take action.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, there's a difference between the information that we would post on the database and information for the
right.
public record.
Right. I understand that. I'm just a little bit concerned about any that this would be a pretty there would be a pretty identifiable line when you would be posting something, because I think, you know, everybody has a right to due process and has a right, if somebody files a complaint against them, to be able to actually address that complaint. And so this doesn't just become a methodology for complaining about someone, almost like a blog. Let's just put it that way. But I'm very satisfied with your answer. So.
Good.
Thank you. You guys did very good work. This is a portion of the work group that worked superlatively well. So,
thank you, sir.
You guys did a great job, as did all of the members. So, thank you for coming. Let me call up in groups here. Shane Jackson and Jim Smith, please. You got a buddy you want to bring up? Bring him with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for hearing my testimony today. My name is Jim Smith. I work with Northwest Mortgage Group. I've been a loan originator for over 15 years, and I'm part owner of Northwest Mortgage Group, located in Portland. We employ a little over 100 employees in the state of Oregon, and right now we're the largest independent mortgage company in Oregon. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 1064. I know a little bit about the work group that went on, and I think that that was a great collaborative way of finding out from both sides what should go into this bill. Our company, myself, we are definitely for finding the bad players in our industry and actually doing something about that, removing them from being able to be a loan originator.
Questions? Jim, I have one. And maybe I should ask Corey this question or Lou. But, we set up the registry. I'm assuming, I'll take a nod in the head of the back of the room, that the broker or the loan originator will get a number, some type of identification number. Okay. Let's say there's kind of a scofflaw loan broker out there that, you know, doesn't qualify, has been kicked out. The system worked. Weeded out that bad apple. But he still, you know, says, hey, this is how I make my livelihood. This is how I make my income. So he opens up a shop out of his house. And he's, you know, functionally, he's got all the paperwork, documentation. Writes a loan to unsuspecting Ben, you know. Walk in. And that goes to escrow. How do we know? I mean, he represents that he's licensed. He says, yeah, I'm a good guy. How do we know?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know how we know. I would assume that there would be some enforcement. I think that there's always been a need for more field audits done by the state, more people to address and penalize the person that's
right. But how do we? It just struck me as kind of like locks keep honest people honest. Okay, we've got this lock keeping the honest brokers honest.
Right.
How are we, David Chair, if I may respond, this is David Tapman again for the record. And the situation that you're describing is one where an individual would try and find a loan. Presumably, the individual is not funding the loan. They're going to go find that third party to make the loan. When the loan application is sent to the third party inevitably will make sure that they're working with somebody that's licensed. Right. They call us. That's how the system works. If somebody's not registered or licensed with us, they stop the process right there. They recognize that their risk and reputation, their reputation is at risk. They recognize that this could be an illegal activity. So the system does work pretty well in that case. Now, if the individual says, I'll fund it directly, well, then that's a wholly different situation. But I don't believe that's the scenario. Most of these people are just going to say, I know who to turn to. I'll get the loan funded for you. And in that process, the lending institution itself will do the due diligence to make sure somebody's licensed. So the system works well in that regard already, I believe.
Are they required to?
They're not required to, but again, it's in their best interest to make sure they're dealing with people. Otherwise, the loan could be, quote, illegal and subject to rescission, if you will. And I think their best interest protects the consumer, ultimately, because they don't want that loan rescinded because something was done illegally.
So the way this is supposed to work, Billy Bob Scofflaw, loan originator, gets an unsuspecting customer. Might even be a very good loan.
Yeah.
And then they go to their money source. That money source may or may not check, verify that this is a licensed broker. I mean, there's nothing codified that says this has to happen.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I believe I'd have to go and look at the law a little more thoroughly, but I believe you're correct that the lender, the company that's funding the loan, is not legally obligated to check that a loan originator is currently employed, if I can use that term loosely, by a mortgage broker. Because what you're talking about is the rogue loan originator that's not affiliated with anyone.
Right.
But they, again, I believe their due diligence will catch that most of the time because it's in their personal best interest not to be issuing loans that it was subject to being rescinded because the loan was illegal. They don't want that situation.
Okay. All right, that answers my question, not to my satisfaction, but I think we got to the bottom of the question. Are you done, Jim?
Sure.
Shane?
A follow-up, Mr. Chair, because we talked about the rogue originator and when they package. What role is played then in a mortgage situation after the package and they've gone to the lender and the lender issues the dollars or says, yes, this is a go? What role does escrow then play? Do they still have to do the further due diligence?
Right.
I really don't know what type of law is on the books that escrow would have to follow under that situation. I really don't know the answer to that.
Well, I appreciate your question, Senator Winters, and I believe I know the answer, and that is nothing. They have no affirmative duty, no responsibility.
I would agree. I don't know the answer, but I don't believe they double-check that at funding.
Yeah, write that one down. Shane, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Shane Jackson. I represent the Oregon Coalition of Mortgage Originators, known as OCMO. I'm also very honored to have been appointed to the governor's appointed mortgage lending work group, where we worked on Senate Bill 1060 and the provisions of it. And I would like to say we wholly support everything that is written in this bill. It answers a lot of issues. Specifically, we were having trouble during the mortgage lending work group delineating and understanding exactly what was occurring in Oregon, specifically to Oregon. And we were using all kinds of data sources trying to identify how many loans were here, what kind of loans were here. And we found out that we really didn't have a definitive grasp on what kind of activity was occurring in Oregon. And by enacting the provisions of this bill, by making the mortgage brokers register with DCBS or their activities, we'll be able to get a much better handle on what kind of activities are occurring here. I feel very comfortable that information will not be abused, that the privileged information covers it, and we will be having good data to be building our policy on in the future. I also like to say it's really good to hear and see that we can now extend down into the mortgage originator, loan originator level, the ability to act punitively and proactively in getting the bad apples out. That's something that's very positive. My biggest issue with this was if somebody was unjustly charged, if some competitor came after another competitor and filed unjust complaints and would mess up his business flow for a little while. But the appeal process, as explained to me by DCBS in this, is satisfactory, and I think this is a very good bill and should be moved forward.
Any questions? Shane, I've got one. It's kind of a question you don't have to answer, but if you'd like to, you sure can. Is there anything that's left out of this bill that should be in it? I'm giving you a break. You don't have to answer that question.
I will venture an answer here.
All right.
In that, it is after the fact. We are dealing with loan originators after the fact, after the damage is done with the punitive actions by taking their registration license away or subjugating them. I would say that what we need to do is to act before this happens. And the only way, there are two ways that I think would help significantly that are not in this bill. One would be to require bonding for loan originators. And what would happen would be was that when somebody gets a bond, they would have to go to a bonding company and prove that they are fine, upstanding people with good quality of character and that they don't have other issues in their lives that they're going to be dragging into their business as a loan originator. So a bonding issue, and the other one would be, and I'm really sticking my neck out here, would be bricks and mortar, by making sure that all the loan originators that are acting in this state are in this state and under the direct purview of Department of Consumer and Business Services. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
All right. Good testimony, gentlemen. Kevin Hancock and Steve Buckstein, enter and sign in, please.
Go ahead. Thank you, Chairman and Committee. My name is Kevin Hancock. I am president of Mortgage Express. We have about 100 employees between Oregon and Washington, and I just wanted to come down today and give my support for Senate Bill 1064. I've owned my company for 8 years, and we have had isolated situations where a loan officer would come to work for us, potentially commit fraud, which is a zero-tolerance policy in our company, and be terminated, and by the end of the day be working at another mortgage company. I think the state has done a great job as far as tightening things up with education requirements. You know, the the problem with it, you know, like you have said, is you have a few bad apples out in the industry that are giving everyone else a bad name, and I just think that having the ability to police something like this from a go-forward point is going to be something that's going to help clarify and rectify the issues that we have right now in the mortgage industry. Because I would say, you know, a vast percentage of the originators in Portland and in the state of Oregon, you know, it's their career. They do it to help people, and, you know, they're out there for the right motives and the right reasons. And, you know, my thought is with Bill 1064 that it's just going to create an opportunity to weed out the individuals that we don't necessarily need in the industry anymore, and thus obviously benefiting the public.
Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I just want to follow up in the scenario that you just gave. For one of those individuals that unfortunately turns out to be a bad apple that was employed by you, you terminate them. What steps, if any, do you take in trying to alert DCBS or whoever as to this action occurring so someone might be on notice before that they might get hired?
What we've done is, and I haven't had the issue come up in the last couple of years, but previously down the road, but now when we terminate an employee, we require to send down to the DFCS a termination form, you know, and on there is a box that you can give the information as to why they were let go. And then the new company that this person would go to work for is supposed to fill out the form and turn it into the state also that they have hired them. So, you know, the wheels are in place now, but just I think giving more teeth to it would be something that would certainly help.
Thank you.
And then let me go to the back of Corey. You can just do this with a nod. Do you have the personnel to be able to cross-check those forms as they come in? Is it, let the record show that the director said yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent testimony. Steve?
Thank you, Chair Westland and members of the committee. I'm Steve Buckstein, Senior Policy Analyst and the founder of Cascade Policy Institute in Portland. And I want to talk a little bit about not just this bill, but sort of the overarching problem that you're dealing with. One of the other bills that I think you'll hear tonight, and I can't be here for that, is talking about you're doing these sort of things because of quote-unquote predatory loan practices that you want to avoid. But before you pass these kind of laws, I think we should take a step back and see and make sure that they aren't hurting the consumer more than they're helping the consumer. And I have an example that we didn't really have data for previously, but we have it now, I think. In 2007, the Oregon legislature capped interest rates on payday loans. And that's the provision of one of the other bills you're looking at, not of this one, but it all relates. And you effectively put those payday lenders, quote-unquote predatory lenders, as they were called, out of business. It's too early to see what effect, I think, that action that you took had on Oregonians who were using those payday lenders for whatever reason. But now we do have some data from other states, and it's a little bit troubling, and I think you should be aware of it. The preliminary conclusions of this data from a report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York strengthen the concern that I expressed when I testified against capping those payday loan interest rates. And I want to read you just the abstract. I've got a link for you on my testimony to the whole 44-page report from the New York Federal Reserve Bank. And the abstract says, quote, payday loans are widely condemned as a predatory debt trap. And you can, again, read the kind of predatory loans you're talking about in mortgages, too. We test that claim by researching how households in Georgia and North Carolina have fared since those states banned payday loans in May of 2004 and December of 2005. You, in effect, banned payday loans here.
Could you please explain how we actually banned it? All we just put a cap on, and the other two states actually did outright ban it.
But the interest rate, without getting into too much detail, Senator.
Well, you go from the door here, Steve.
Okay. Yes, you can see in the reporting how many of the payday loan companies went out of business here. Many of them did because they felt that they couldn't make money at the rates at the maximum rates that you imposed.
At 36%.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So there are two states that these Federal Reserve researchers looked at, and compared with households in all other states, the households in Georgia that one state where they did ban the payday loans, have bounced more checks, complained more to the Federal Trade Commission about lenders and debt collectors, and filed Chapter 7 bankruptcy at a higher rate. North Carolina, the other state that banned payday loans about 3 years ago, has fared about the same. This negative correlation, meaning reduced payday credit supply equaled increased credit problems, contradicts the debt trap critique of payday lending, but is consistent with the hypothesis that payday credit is preferable to substitutes, such as bounced check protection sold by credit unions and banks, or loans from pawn shops, unquote. So it appears that banning those borrowing opportunities, even if they appeared to be bad opportunities to lawmakers, ended up hurting the very consumers that the bans were meant to help. Now, to this bill, I'm basically neutral on the bill that you're looking at right at the moment. I have little problem with bills that require full disclosure, so that you know what's going on, so you know that there are, fraud going on, that sort of thing. I do have a problem with occupational licensure laws that are too strict, because I think they actually help the industry more than they help the consumer. As long as there's full disclosure, I don't like the idea that it's too hard to get into any occupation. And I think you'll see that most of the people supporting a bill like the one you're talking about this morning are already in the industry. They're not necessarily the consumers that you're trying to protect. But again, I think this bill is rather, relatively innocuous. I'm more concerned about, I think it's 1090, where you're talking about capping interest rates, the one for foreclosure consultants on, I believe it's the House side, where you're talking about restricting certain practices. When you start banning practices such as prepayment penalties, such as interest rates, putting a cap on interest rates, even if you believe it's plenty high, you have unintended consequences, and that's what happened in these other states. So basically, I would just urge you to sort of take a step back before you look at this whole package that you're looking at, and make sure that you're not harming consumers more than you're helping them. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I mean, I understand the point you made. I think it might be a little bit. It's too early to tell if any of your hypotheses are correct here in Oregon, but the comparisons you were making to states that outright banned payday lenders. So I'm just going to let the jury still be out on that one. The one point that maybe we can agree on that hasn't really been discussed here today, that's a significant part of this whole situation, is that we as public policymakers need to create opportunities for financial literacy, particularly in certain communities, and the ability to readily access IDAs, individual development accounts, which are incented savings and financial knowledge programs designed to achieve a specific goal. And the real answer is we've got to get more of our unbanked citizens banked. So with that, I'll just thank you for your testimony and ask if there's...
Only I think you want George. Or
go ahead.
I want to thank you for your testimony. I thought maybe you'd been listening to my comments the other night because I did talk about unintended consequences. When we deny access to financial resources, and often we think we are assisting. And it's kind of interesting because the National Black Caucus of State Legislators have adopted our resolution, and I don't have the exact wording, but basically it says pretty much what you have stated, that we don't put unnecessary instruments in the way of individuals to access monies. and to put them in a place to where they cannot be able to, one, restore their credit, and two, to where they can't have be able to get mortgages and loans. And also did recommend that we do financial literacy, recognizing that probably the education component is very valuable if we're going to provide consumers with the tools with which to be able to ask the right questions, know about economics and what have you. So our good chair is correct that we need to be looking at financial literacy, as well as I believe I don't want to go back to the days of when we made things very difficult for minorities and poor whites, for that matter, to be able to get to afford homes in this state. And so I'm very concerned. I expressed that the other night, and I'll continue to express it, because I think any time you limit choices, you limit the ability of people to be able to, whatever creative means that they're able to get dollars. I don't want to do that.
Senator, or Chair Westland and Senator Winters, I agree with virtually everything both of you have said, which is unusual for me, probably. individual development accounts are a fabulous idea, helping people build assets instead of just being dependent on income streams, welfare, food stamps, whatever. Helping people actually take charge of their financial lives is wonderful. But Senator Winters has, a real point that when you restrict choices, and sometimes it comes in the form of restricting entry to an industry, minorities and poor people are hurt the most, and there's quite a bit of research on that. And it's, again, much broader than just mortgage originators. So there's all kind of occupations where low-income people, relatively unskilled people, could be in those occupations except for regulations, and Oregon puts some of those on some of the occupations in Oregon. So I know we're talking about just one specific area here, but I would just encourage you not to do that in this case, because you don't just hurt the people trying to get in that industry. You hurt a lot of, I think, low-income minority people trying to get up the economic ladder.
But here's the balance. You know, you deny access to low-income folks, you're hurting them. You give the wrong kind and inappropriate access to low-income folks, you're hurting them. Now, it's got to be the right access.
Well, Senator Westland, that's where the education comes in. I mean, the more people are educated, understand economics, understand finance, understand the choices they're making, the trade-offs they're making, the more they can make those decisions, the better they can make those decisions for themselves.
Mm. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you allowing us to get a little bit off what the bill is dealing with, but I have Steve here, and I want to ask this question, which piggybacks with what Senator Winters just said, and that is, if you think about it, and you have a person who has never qualified in the past for a home loan, you know, because they just don't have that kind of high-level credit. I don't want to call it substandard. I think that's kind of insulting. But somebody comes by and says, I'm going to make that money available. This person can become, you know, the first-time homeowner. And so somebody makes a loan. So here's the money, and here's the person that owns a house currently, and they exchange, right? The previous homeowner gets their money, and it appears to me the only person that has any risk, particularly a zero-down type loan, is the person that loaned the money. Now, obviously, if it goes into foreclosure, then that person's credit rating could be hurt. But really, who's at risk here? It would appear to me that if we deny, because this person might be at risk, the person that provided the money, we deny that person the opportunity, we maybe created much more harm than we did good. Could you kind of...
Chair Westland, Senator George, I tend to agree with that. You have the law, well, you've all understood what's called unintended consequences, but you also have what Frederick Bastiat called the seen and the unseen. You see right now, the reason we're all here, I think, today, is that you see some of the problems that are developed in the, again, quote-unquote, subprime mortgage market, and there's some real harm. But what you don't see is all of the people who benefited from these new opportunities communities, the people that are not in trouble on their finances, mm-hmm. the people that now have homes that didn't have them before, the people who sold their homes maybe at a higher price than they would have been able to before. You don't see those people because they're not complaining. And so you risk, at the risk of trying to protect the people who were hurt, you risk hurting all those other people that you don't even know benefited. So, again, be very careful, I'd say, before you try to solve a problem that you see, because you may be making other problems worse. Or creating other problems.
Could I do a follow-up and then maybe we'll quickly. Take the broker? And that is such an important point. We have a lot of people that had first-time homeowner opportunities. Okay, what percentage of those in that, let's call it subprime, are now in default? It's not 100%. If it's 50%, that means 50% were successful and probably will continue to be successful, and they wouldn't have been a homeowner before. So I really think this is a balancing effort we're trying to do here. Can anyone, either one of you, comment on that?
Oh.
There are three levels of bad, you know, in
capital
a committee room.
Judiciary chair.
When a member of the audience's phone goes off, ooh. When a, you know, member of the Senate or House's phone goes off, ooh. And then...
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to use myself as an example.
I mean, this is Dante's 13th ring of hell. I mean, this woman is in trouble.
I am in trouble. I apologize.
And I'm so thankful that you, not me. That was a good question. You want to respond to that?
Senator, or Chair Westland, Senator George, I don't have the figures. I've read some things in the paper, but I don't know what percentage. But again, the percentage to me is not as important as the concept. If it's 50%, it's 50%. I'm not sure if you have any numbers.
I don't, but I'm sure it's not 50%.
It's less than that, but far better than that.
Mr. Chairman, the numbers that I have seen probably would indicate, and generally in the range of when we looked over the period, about 16% would be in foreclosure. That does not mean that more would not be in default or behind, but 16% would be in foreclosure.
15% of how many?
Through 2008.
Yeah, through the next year.
Yeah, and we don't want to spin off into all this, but it's like if, you know, three of those loans are in foreclosure and in default, you know, or in a given neighborhood, well, that hurts that person who is successful at it, who, mm-hmm. you know, is actually making, you know, the sub or any prime type of loan work. So, I mean, there's ripple
probably
effects
only in the
here.
Short term, though. If they're able to survive it,
well,
hang on, values are going to go back.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jim?
Real quickly.
What I would say on that is, you know, granted you have your, if the number is 16% we could agree on, then obviously that means that there are 74% of those first-time buyers who are, number one, experiencing mm-hmm. equity, growing their credit, mm-hmm. and creating financial opportunities for themselves and their families down the road.
84.
Sorry. Bad math. But, you know, I think that, you know, the direction this bill's going is good, and I would certainly be more towards regulating the loan officers versus the products that are available mm-hmm. to regulate.
Experiencing equity if the loan was written that way.
I agree with you.
And that'd be another interesting factoid to know how many of these are functionally interest-only, no equity being built up. So. But again, you know, part of this, and I think Shane and Jim and certainly Kevin has testified, you know, big key to this is loan officer sitting behind the desk.
Agreed.
Who's that person? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, as our panel leaves, I do want to just put on the record, based on the testimony we heard regarding the total ban, as the chair said, we did not totally ban. We have interest cap rates. And I'd also direct us to Washington State, which have had regulations and caps for 12 years, and their industry continued to grow. And we actually use that in our modeling when we were putting together the payday loan bills.
Very good. Thank you for putting that on the record. Chris Ambrose and Sean Gillians. Chris, you made it over the mountains.
I did. Thank you.
I haven't been home for 9 days, so, you know.
You're missing some beautiful weather, but interesting coming over the pass nonetheless.
Gentlemen, Take your pick.
Good morning, Chair Westland, members of the committee. My name is Chris Ambrose, and I am the immediate past president of the Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association here on behalf of the Oregon Mortgage Lenders Association, which is the Oregon affiliate of the Mortgage Bankers Association. I also am an attorney with Ambrose Law Group and do represent mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers. I am here in support of Senate Bill 1064 this morning. I'll be very brief. This is a bill that I believe is long overdue. Perhaps most importantly, and what I would like to focus on briefly, is the aspect that essentially closes a loophole. In the past, there had been the components, and I'll try not to reiterate what others I'm sure have talked about earlier today. In the past, there had been this loophole essentially allowing the DCBS to bring enforcement actions against the companies themselves, the brokers or the licensees. However, there had been limited authority to bring action against the loan originators directly. That loophole is essentially closed by this particular Senate bill, giving the DCBS authority to directly enforce actions against the loan originators. Another component that is long overdue, as many of you know, there has been a battle, as perhaps best evidenced by the line of questioning that just occurred. There's been a real battle over data gathering and the ability to find out really what's going on in the state of Oregon and around the country. And while we have used the best available data from the Mortgage Bankers Association and First American CoreLogic and RealtyTrack and right on down the line, this particular bill, from our perspective, will enable the DCBS to gather that data. While it's certainly not perfect, since it would be limited essentially to licensees, of course, something is better than nothing. We did express on the task force, the OMLA, real concerns about the privacy aspects of this, both from the OMLA perspective and from mortgage bankers and brokers in the industry. There is certainly a concern that what they provide to the DCBS is going to go out to the general public, which would cause competition problems, possibly. We're convinced, however, with the application of ORS 705.137 that privacy concern is addressed, and certainly we have the utmost respect for the DCBS and the director and trust that they will limit their data gathering efforts to that which is really necessary for the betterment of Oregon. Having said all that, again, OMLA is in support of SB 1064. We believe this is the kind of legislation that's appropriate for this particular interim session. It will have an immediate effect, or at least an effect right after enactment, in improving, from our perspective, the circumstances in the state of Oregon. Thank you for your time.
Any questions? Just, I think it should be said that one of the real stalwarts of the work group was Mr. Ambrose, who had to travel, as I was alluding to, over treacherous roads to get there on many occasions. And while I didn't always agree with everything he said, his presence was, a positive and much appreciated by all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. As a member of the governor's work group, we are in support of this bill. We think it's a good step in the right direction, and we certainly support the Dash 1 amendments that came forth in a consensus fashion. I think it's important to note, too, that the discussion that went on earlier, we certainly don't see this as a silver bullet. This isn't the one and only cure for bad actors or practices that have occurred in the past, but this is an important first step. The governor's work group also has two other legislative concepts that I believe will be coming before your committee once they pass the House. We feel those are important steps. And I know on Friday I mentioned it, but I think it's important to note that work group is committed to continuing their work after this legislative session, and if need be, bring legislative concepts to the 09 session. And I can speak for the realtors specifically. We are certainly committed to that.
So there's a problem that needs to be fixed.
There are certainly issues, Mr. Chair, and we believe that these are some of the steps in correcting that.
Any questions for Sean? Gentlemen.
Thank you.
Rick Bennett and Sybil Hebb. I am really happy to see one of these two witnesses.
Uh-oh. Better go first.
Look it out. Chair Westland, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center. Wanted to express again our appreciation of the great amount of work that's gone into the creation of this concept, as well as the other concept that's coming from the DCPS work group and the governor's work group. Really appreciate the work of the chair and the committee on these issues. We think this bill is an important first step in laying a foundation of protection for consumers in addressing the issues that are that we're suffering in the state and across the nation. We do remain supportive of discussions about further protections so that we can ensure that we're creating a web of protection and not leaving significant gaps that would undermine the efforts that have been put forward by the DCPS work group. And so we look forward to participating in that further discussion this evening and in the future. And I appreciate your help.
Thank you so very, 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 very much. For being here. It's great to see you. Next.
Hi, Rick.
Morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations, ARP, Oregon. How did I sign in? Am I for or against this? ARP supports the bill.
It's hard to say. I mean, it's just general sign-up. You can be anything you want.
We believe that expanding the what is the definition, what is an acceptable level of contact, conduct is good. Creating a registry, collecting data is good. In its limited fashion, we think this is a good bill, should move forward. We support it. Thank you.
Thank you. John, any questions for this panel? And thank you both for being here. John McCulley. Enter and sign in, please.
Bless you. Bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Association of Mortgage Professionals. We are strongly in support of Senate Bill 1064. It embodies some concepts that our organization has been seeking since the 2001 legislative session, when we brought to you a bill that would have required licensing of loan originators, and we have been promoting that idea ever since. We had to settle in 2001 for measures that implemented the education and testing requirements that you've previously heard about. And Senator Devlin, as a member of the committee where that bill went, will remember the difficulty we had in even getting that. But we've made great progress. We have supported the ideas of criminal background checks on loan originators. And now this step is here, we believe, to finally put a way to get at loan originators who are rogues, if that's an appropriate term to use here. So we support this bill. We think the other important component that you heard about this morning is the enforcement, the additional enforcement. I'm pleased to see that the co-chairs have included that funding in their recommended budget adjustments. We believe that also will make tremendous improvements in this process. And I hope that you recognize, like we do, that this probably is one of the key bills this session in protecting consumers. We think that this will be significant, and I don't want to downplay any other things that you'll be dealing with in this area related to mortgage lending, but this is a significant bill from our standpoint, and we think you can be very proud in taking this back to your constituents and telling them that you have made major steps in protecting consumers. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Questions for the John man? Thank you for your participation as well. Committee, we've heard all the testimony. I think we have one.
Mr. Chair, we're going to go into work.
Yeah.
Can we be at ease for a moment, Mr. Chair?
We will stand at ease for a few moments.
There was a glitch, and my assistant did not properly post. Thank you.
Are the tapes running? We will reconvene the Senate Committee on Commerce and Labor. And before your very eyes, you are going to see a feat of amazing dexterity and magic, because nothing you have seen, heard, or said
took place.
Did you explain why, Mr. Chairman?
No, I don't have to. I'm the chair.
Just know we will revisit. Isn't that right, Mr. Chairman?
Here is the issue is with all of the noticing that went on very dutifully and attended to. And unless you have done this, I mean, you don't understand the nuances and the detail of it. There was one notice not posted in front of the Senate chamber, as is required by our rules. So, detail, 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 and that detail is an important one. And so we are going to honor our Senate rules, and we will take up these two bills, which I think we all know have the votes to pass, and we will pass them as quickly as we can on Friday and get on with our business. Let me also announce that, sorry, Chris, that this evening's 6 o'clock joint meeting was not properly posted, and so we cannot properly hold that meeting.
Mr. Chair, clarification, because you said joint meeting. I don't know, is the House also impacted by the lack of posting, or, and if not,
no, that's
we
a
might
detail.
Mr. Chair, Senator Prezonsky, I'd have to look into that, but yes, I mean, the intent was for them to listen on the merits of Senate Bill 1090. So I will check on that end.
Wait. This is important because we got a lot of people here.
I know.
The House.
This is. You're talking about the Senate and the House meetings together.
Right.
Yes.
As a committee.
Right. Chair. Yeah. Can we do this again?
Well, I told you you didn't hear anything here today, so the words I say now, I want to be accurate. What we are going to do, what appears to be the plan now, is we will
adjourn the meeting that never occurred.
we will adjourn the meeting that never occurred, but there's more to it than that. We will hear these bills in very rapid fashion on Friday morning. We will not have, so that takes care of 1063 and 1064. We will not be able to have the larger work group informational meeting this evening on 1090. So, having said that, I and any committee members that want, or any public members or agency staff that want, I will be here in this hearing room at 6 o'clock tonight, and as long as we don't have a quorum, we can discuss and 1090 around so this dialogue can continue. We are adjourned.
Okay.